Before we start, remind everyone to silence your cell phones. Thank you. Our next talk is The History and Documentation of Old Hawaii Sign Language and Deaf Lives in the Past. And the speakers are, the signers are Barbara Earth, Linda Lambrecht, and James Woodward.
Welcome, everyone. It's not Old Hawaiian Sign Language, because in the past it wasn't old. I'm Barbara, this is Linda and Woody. So we're going to be taking turns. 2 days ago we announced Hawaii Sign Language is distinct from American Sign Language, a separate language. So today we're going to show you the evidence for why we concluded that. We have historical as well as linguistic evidence. The first glimpse we have of deaf people in Hawaii was a letter from Hiram Bingham. He was the leader of the first company of missionaries in Hawaii, arriving in 1820. This letter is dated 1821. He was writing to his friend and colleague. They were both reverends and they had religious callings. They knew each other's work. Gallaudet set them off when they sailed to Hawaii. notice it's from the Sandwich Islands. And in 1821, they didn't have the writing system yet, so they spelled Oahu like that. Okay, from this letter, Gallaudet was the founder of the first deaf school in the US. And he was curious about, are there deaf people there? Do they have signs? Do they look like ours? And Bingham, Gallaudet knew American Sign Language. Bingham didn't know it, but he had seen it. So Bingham wrote back to Gallaudet these experiences. Someone else had arranged to buy firewood and divide it up between two people. So the deaf man brought this information. He gets 40 sticks. So, you know the deaf people could count. And he related another incident where the same deaf man, it's too bad he didn't write his name down or, you know, try to see any other deaf people, but he was describing the deaf man selling him a pig. He said the pig was long, big, and ready for slaughter. And then Bing was like, well, I don't know, I don't know. The man had also indicated how much money. And Bing was like, well, maybe, you know, he was trying to underbid him. So the man said, go see for yourself. So these examples show that deaf people were there. They had at least a rudimentary sign language in 1820. And that's pretty remarkable. Moreover, from his notes, it might have been possible for deaf and hearing people to have some common means of communicating. Because he described the language as incorporating many gestures. And he also noted that the deaf man could easily converse with the general population as well as Bingham himself. Okay, so So that's the first information, and unfortunately we don't have more like that. Maybe there's more that we haven't found yet. So from the very distant past up until 1821, when we get the first information, that was, we don't know, but it was the origins of Hawaii Sign Language. In 1821 is the letter. I just want to state that the missionaries were never involved in deaf education in Hawaii, and they never involved with sign language. In 1876, the Hawaiian press noted in the legislature, one of the legislators had noted deaf people there in Honolulu, and they needed a school. Okay, in the late 1800s, many articles started appearing about deaf people in the English press. And these are so interesting because you see what the deaf people were doing. They were selling flowers, they were shining shoes, they were selling newspapers. They often ended up in court. Sometimes they were victims of persecution. Sometimes they were witnesses to crimes. And in 1900, around 1900, there were reports of interpreters being used in court. These were family members or members of the community. They weren't trained or anything. So the blue collar indicates the holy Hawaiian time period. But if you know Hawaiian history, you know around the middle, around the mid-1800s, like 1852, immigrants started being imported to work on the sugar plantations. First the Chinese in 1852, Portuguese 1878, Japanese 1886, and so on into the 20th century. The immigrants were, by the 1890s, Hawaiians were a minority in their own home. And the immigrants were the larger proportion of the population. So, around that time also, some newspaper reports indicate deaf people of different ethnic background, not only Hawaiian deaf people. So it's that the immigrant children were being born in the immigrant communities, in the plantation settlements, and their children of children are being born. So we have two communities, immigrant communities of deaf people, native community of deaf people. So deaf people see each other, get together, pool their signs. So this means that the language was incorporating a lot more influences, both the indigenous heritage, possibly influences from the Hawaiian language, hula, we're not sure yet, but also immigrant experiences, life in the plantations, their different cultural backgrounds. Pidgin language was also influencing the corpus of Hawaii Sign Language. One thing, this is the biggest curious thing, is they used a two-handed British manual alphabet. This deserves another presentation. We don't know how it got there, how it came into use. There's one article about a stowaway from Liverpool. Maybe he brought it. The captain of the ship was making fun of his finger spelling. That was 1893. It's the right time. It could have possibly been him, but we don't know. So this color indicates the time period where Hawaii Sign Language incorporated the immigrant experience. experience as well as the Hawaiian experience. Finally, a school for defectives was set up in 1914 by the Women's Cooperative League. It was prominent American ladies. And they went and they did a survey and found how many defective children needed a school. And so that was the beginning of school. In 1921, they separated the deaf and blind from the other other kinds of challenges. In 1923, this is really important, they had dorms, because that meant that deaf children could come from the other islands, and this served to standardize Hawaii Sign Language, because they would go home, share it with other deaf people. Okay, starting around here, we get strong influence from American Sign Language. I'm going to stop now, and Linda's going to describe our hero, Edwin N.
His name is Edwin. He was born in Hawaii. He was born deaf. His mother was Hawaiian. His father was Chinese. And he was born to his parents. Now I'm going to switch over to ASL. His parents were very strict. He went to school at age 5. He learned very, very quickly. And there at the deaf school, because he was signing and the other students were just enamored with him. And he was a fierce sportsman and he was a great competitor. And to boot, he was very, very handsome. And he later on and went and married, and he married a Hollywood lady, and he has 4 children. And he became active and president of the Deaf Club, and he fought for deaf people to have rights to have driver's licenses in Hawaii. When he retired, he moved to California, and I believe he passed away in 1992. But the very short time that he was here in Hawaii. The next photo, please. I've met his son 2 months ago. I had a wonderful conversation with him about his father.
Okay, next we're going to move into the linguistic evidence, and Woody's going to talk.
Okay, many hearing people have often claimed that whatever Hawaii Sign Language is just a group of signs, and it basically maybe is a dialect of American Sign Language, but I mean, how could deaf people develop their own sign language, right? So, well, you know, what can I say? There's a lot of pressure from hearing populations. Okay, but there have been no previous historical comparative studies, and so now we're going to look at a recent study. So using lexical statistics, and why are we using lexical statistics? Because there's it's basically the only one that has enough data to work, okay? So often lexical statistics is used to determine relationships across unwritten languages which are underdescribed or described, and this is what happens with Hawaii Sign Language. So I'd just like to say that in doing sign language lexical statistics, we need to be careful that we only compare core basic vocabulary, and we need to use a modified Swadesh word list. We can't use the traditional word list because it tends to overestimate the number of cognates because of signs that use indexing or pointing. And we also Some people now are saying, oh, well, we just count parameters. If two parameters are the same, then it's a cognate. It doesn't work that way, okay? You have to be able to show that the signs are related back to a common ancestor, okay? We can talk about this more during the question and answer period, but we have to be able to invoke processes that are common in both spoken and sign languages. Okay, so. Okay, so basically if we look at 80 to 100%, most people classify those dialects of the same language. 36 to 79 or 80 distinct languages belonging to the same language family. Below 36%, sign languages belonging to different families. Well, we heard it mentioned before that Trinidad and Tobago signs have 50% cognate with ASL, probably using the same criteria. Okay, what about Hawaii Sign Language? 20%, and I'm not even sure that there are 20% that are possibly related, because people are sometimes remembering not the oldest signs, but individual signs. So for example, when I first asked for the sign for blue, I got this sign, and I thought, okay, that's an American sign. But then somebody recently told me, oh, well, actually before that, blue. So, and I think there were other signs before that. So what we're trying to do is to jog people's memories, because some of this language has been kept secret for many years. Anyway, so it's not related to, it's a separate language from ASL. It's not related in the same family as ASL. It belongs to a different language family. What language family does it belong to? I don't know, because I've never seen any sign language like it. Okay, I've never seen any sign like it. So now we'll call it a language isolate. Oops. Okay, and we notice that it has basically subject, object, verb, word order. We're not positive about that. Okay, it has noun adjective word order and noun numeral word order. It has verb negative word order, and it has sentence final WH question words. I'll look at some examples. I'd like to thank the University of Hawaii for helping us make this video. Different. All the basic signs that I said are not the same, look that different. So it's pretty remarkable. Okay. Just to close up here. Okay, so again, only 20% possibly shared cognates, and it looks like no other sign language now must be classified as a specific isolate. But we do hope to do research on other specific Pacific Island Sign Languages. Now just in general, HSL scores 92% critically endangered level of uncertainty is 25%. I have all the information in your handout if you want to read it. Hawaii's sign language scores is only 1% documented. So it's very, very little documentation. And the only documentation we have is due to Linda and Barbara and there he is, Professor William O'Grady, who is the director of the project that we're reporting on. Okay. So we do have a proposal for documentation and conservation. I'm not going to go into detail about that. I'll stop now for questions. But one day, I just want to close, and well, before I close, I want to say, you remember what Barbara said about money? Well, actually, you signed money and money for dollars, okay? And this actually is the same order that's used in Hawaiian sign language today, now in Numo. So there are very, very many interesting possibilities here, okay? But one day, I hope, before I die, which maybe not too far in the future, then one never knows, I hope that there will be classes in Hawaii sign language taught in Hawaii at the high school and university level. So that's one of my goals in the near future, and I think all of our goals. And yes, we want to thank the sources who helped with financial support and other support for this project. Without these, could not have been done.
One of the problems, of course, in collecting data on sign language is if there's a hearing person in the room, then there's a tendency for the sign language to shift more like the national spoken language. I could anticipate that there'd be a similar problem if there were ASL signers in the room when collecting data on Hawaiian sign language. Do you have any ideas of how to avoid that problem?
Well, Linda is a native user of Hawaiian Sign Language. And so basically, I'm hoping that she will do all the interviewing.
And the interviews that we conducted, no one was in the room except Linda, most of the time.
But it should be noted that there is heavy code mixing of HSL and ASL in everyday conversation between users.
When I grew up, I mostly used Hawaiian Sign Language. When you're in school, we had to code switch. You know, the teacher didn't know American Hawaiian Sign Language. So the influence has changed us, you know, as we looked up to the teacher and it changed to ASL. I think during the 1960s, that's when it changed.
I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about the BSL manual alphabet. And is that, would you consider that a part of Hawaiian Sign Language? And is it used in things like word formation processes?
The alphabet itself, they didn't know how to do the letters. They had given them some kind of a, I don't know, like we had mentioned, maybe a stoneware, some kind of a card. They found the alphabet. So now the British Sign Language, that vowels are on the fingers from A to E, you know, A, E, I, O, U. And so the deaf people formed the letter for the vowels themselves using not the, the traditional BSL, but they used their own formation of the vowels. So you see that less and less today, though.
But you don't find you don't find signs that are made from fingers spelled words. So it was not productive other than to use to finger spell names, things like this. So, and I mean, if you're looking at this tape, there's no relation to British Sign Language because the British signs for father and mother, they don't show up. No signs that look like British Sign Language show up. So we think it was only maybe a coincidence that it was borrowed and maybe people used it because there was no local indigenous fingerspelling and for fingerspelling names that's useful, but it had no real impact on the language itself as far as we can tell.
Thank you.
was in addition.
Surely, BSL was used, but there were two different things that deaf people used. Like the word H, they changed it to look like this, an H, and they continue to use H this way. In the British, they use the pinky finger to create the Z. So they didn't like using that. So there are some things that they changed it to form it and use it in Hawaiian language.
One more question. I was singing a song for Hawaii, like, well, like that.
In ASL.
Yeah, which I assume was ASL, but it was
yeah.
A huge thing. Is that what's the Hawaiian sign?
The real
yeah,
sign was this
Hawaiian
one finger pointing to the roundness of the face. The using the alphabet H around the face. I usually during the years that one sign with the finger around to indicate the face was something that people said, well, what does that sign mean and why are you using that? So they changed it to use an H. So this was the sign for Hawaii. And ASL modified it to using an H around the face.
Any tradition of the Hawaiian deaf engaged with Ole or Hula or any of the oral performance arts or dance?
Well, we think so, but we don't. There's still a lot more work to be done on that.
My own interpretation is there probably wasn't very much influence, if any. There may have been some. The reason why I say this is people, when I worked in Cambodia, they said the same thing, oh, well, the signs must have come from Cambodian dance. No relationship. No signs borrow from dance signs. The same was true in India. People said, oh, there has to be a relationship with classical Indian dance. No signs related. So it could be the case here, and there may be one or two signs, but want to ask Linda?
I think many of it was borrowed. Like, for example, the sign for horse. I saw, I think the singer's name is Hilo Hatties. They signed for horse. And I got that sign language that's almost is similar to horse that they use for sign language. I don't know if they borrowed from us or we borrowed from them. Yes, fish and hula would be this.
Okay, well, there is some relationship then because that's the Hawaiian sign. But I don't think it's huge amount of vocabulary.
I have a question.
Now I grew up, we used in Hawaii, the letter W is pronounced with a V, Hawaii. So we use this sign for Hawaii, but I remember growing up, H was spelled was this way, so they had changed the way the direction the H was used. And I remember, like I said, we would say hi this way and not hi this way. So it did change the direction.
One more or?
I'd like to, love to tell you more, but I know time is constrained.
We have time for one more question.
Have there been a lot of efforts to start doing cross comparisons now that you've identified this as a language isolate? I think it'd be really interesting to see other cases where we've had these types of languages come together and see the nuanced differences between them. Or is this mainly really focused here locally and doing it in a local college? I know you had mentioned you wanted to really teach these classes in a university setting.
Yeah. We need to look at, well, Pacific Island Sign Languages are some of the least documented sign languages in the world. There are many undocumented sign languages. Pacific Island Sign Languages, we don't have any idea of how many there are, and many of them are endangered. So maybe we'll look at Samoa, some other places. similarities. I think we have to start doing that. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, just sort of other regional institutions that maybe have also been involved. I see you have, you know, some others up here that have been involved in some way, but this is just funding, or is this?
This is just funding.
Okay.
Yeah. Some personnel.
This is people who help financially.
That's good.
Thank you so much.